Coaching as Benevolence, a podcast for people who are curious about using coaching for self-development. I'm Erin with Roots and Wings Grief and Loss Coaching.
And I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place Positive Intelligence Coaching.
All right, so today we are going to talk about trust, building trust in relationships, what trust means, and how that can be fostered, nurtured in relationships that we have, our personal relationships, professional relationships. We'll be talking about where that shows up in coaching and in other aspects of our lives. So I guess to begin with, I suppose it might be a good idea to define what trust is. And how we, from a coaching lens, how we define trust, being able to feel safe sharing information, sensitive information or otherwise, with someone, knowing that you can rely on someone. I think reliability, confidentiality, those are some things that come up when trust is mentioned or when we are thinking about trust. Erin, do you have any other thoughts related to trust, what that means to you?
Yeah, so for me, with the trust in relationships, it's kind of like starting with that trust in the relationship with the self. And automatically my brain just goes to, like, in grief and loss, how that can feel so disrupted because everything was just disrupted in our lives. So it's really challenging sometimes to trust, and specifically trust ourselves to go through the grief journey, trust ourselves to carry parts of the grief with us, and trust ourselves to grow with it and to do some of that self-understanding and improvement work that often shows up in coaching. So that is the first area where my brain went. And then the second thing is, when you were talking about how you define trust and sharing sensitive information and knowing that it's held with care, you know, I think that's so important. And that's such a gift. That's such a gift in friendship, such a gift in, you know, partnerships or marriages. And I think those are probably the two person-to-person relationships, and maybe there are more, where that level of trust can be formed in that way. And so I think that's really empowering to be able to have that interconnected piece with the trust. And then a lot of people put trust in a higher power, in a religion or a set of beliefs, or their own intuition, or through various healing modalities. And I think that level of trust is a little bit different. I think it's a little, you know, it's like, oh, is it more risky or less risky? And I think, you could argue in so many ways that all of these are both risky and unrisky in comparison. But putting that trust in a meditative practice or a prayerful practice is another thing that comes to mind that people use in the coaching world, and even in just their daily life or in their spiritual life, to put their trust in something beyond themselves. And I must say that sometimes that may feel like that is all we have, but the power and the promise of that trust with what is unseen is that there is goodness there. There is truly a level of love in that we may not even be able to access what that fully is like, but it is there and it is waiting for people. And so when people can trust that, I think it can be really helpful when other areas of their lives may feel like they can't trust within. So that was kind of the three areas that my brain went into. And I'll turn it back to you, LaShawn, as far as how you maybe think about trust.
One thing that comes to mind when you were talking was the idea of safety and secure, like feeling safe, knowing that the things that you say, the things that dreams, your fears, your thoughts, your doubts, those things are going to land and not be criticized. They're not going to be judged. And I think that's a major part of trust, is knowing that, especially in relationships, knowing that you're not going to be judged or criticized, that the person is going to hold whatever you bring to the space with care. And as you had said before, Erin, about the care, I think that's really important. I also think that there needs to be loving kindness as well in a relationship where trust is, knowing that the person is thinking about what's best for you, or is thinking about what's going to be beneficial to both of us, what's going to be beneficial to the other person and to myself and to the relationship itself. So I think it is very important to have that element of care and also benevolence. to go to coaching as benevolence, that care of benevolence, and also that and respect is also really important. I think when trust is part of the equation, you need to have that respect, mutual respect and understanding, and knowing that the other person is coming from a good place. That knowing that that person cares about you, cares about the relationship. It's very hard to have trust when there's a sense that the person doesn't care or the person is not as sincere as you are. So if we just pivot a little bit and look at how one builds trust, and I think this has to do, it does really go into what we're talking about when we're defining trust, but how one builds trust. And we could look at the coaching lens, like looking at the coaching relationship. Confidentiality is a huge piece in coaching. We assure our clients that anything that's said in the coaching, you know, with legal and ethical parameters is kept confidential. And we also have the non-judgment piece as well in coaching. We're there to partner with our clients. We're not there to judge or even to give advice about how things should be. We're there to co-create solutions with our clients. And so I think consistency is also a big part of that trust in the coaching relationship, being there, following through, showing up for those appointments. And also the communication is a big piece of that too. Open channels of communication, transparency, and also listening, just being an empathetic and an active listener as a coach. I think that builds trust because the person feels heard, feels seen, feels valued. That also, I think, is part of the coaching relationship when we are establishing trust. What are your thoughts, Erin?
I agree on all the levels of how a coach creates a trusting relationship with their client. And I like specifically the part you talked about around listening, because I think that with listening, it's a powerful way of showing that you care and that you truly want to help the individual find co-created solutions in the appointment that feels good to them, that's something they'll move forward with, and that they can trust themselves to actually implement, or they can trust themselves with this process as well. So I think listening for me is a pathway to building trust on so many levels as a coach. And then, yeah, the professional quality of the coach is another key piece of the trust. You know, how do you keep learning and growing? And, you know, how do you collaborate with other people to keep engaging your coaching practice in new and meaningful ways? And I think being lifelong learners, I know you, LaShawn, are, and me, we both value sitting in the learner space. I think that helps us build trust as well, that we're going to do our best, not just to do our best, but to really help the individual actualize their wants and needs and their goals. And so as part of building trust as a coach, we're helping the client build trust in themselves. So I want to explore that a little bit more too. How is the client learning to trust themselves? I think it's partly through very, very, very small action steps that they take outside of the appointment. Maybe it's writing a sentence in a week that is encouraging, or maybe it's doing 5 lunges in a day and starting there. And I think when you can start small, that's part of it. But the other piece to building trust is one, trusting themselves and their own intuition to move forward with strategies that are more likely to work for them. So 5 lunges for somebody may not work, whereas writing a sentence could be magical for another person, right? And so really helping the client learn to trust themselves through their own intuition and meaning making. And that's what we do by asking questions. And so the questions that we bring into our meetings with our client can be incredibly powerful around their own way of being and who they really are and how they want to show up moving forward, recognizing all the messiness of it too, and helping the clients to learn to trust themselves through that messiness, through the roadblocks. And one of the really cool goal setting activities that I do with clients explicitly lays out roadblocks for implementation. So the client and I come up together, what are possible roadblocks for you to be able to move forward with trying this that may be really helpful for you or not. And when we can really sit with those roadblocks, they become a little less scary in some ways. And now you have a plan for them and you can trust yourself as the client to say, okay, now that I've met this roadblock, oh, I figured that was probably going to come. I figured that was probably going to show up. So I can trust myself through that. And then the other piece with that is hope theory, C.R. Snyder's hope theory out of the field of positive psychology. And he and his model shows that obstacles are necessary for growth. They're necessary for the implementation of the actual goals you're working toward. And so when we can make those feel a little less big and know that they're a part of the process in advance and identify some of those earlier on, I think that can help people to trust themselves. And then they can meet bigger obstacles and continue to trust their history and their self-understanding to move through those obstacles and reach the goals that they're looking to reach.
I love that you bring in the, again back in that self-trust and how as coaches we can foster that self-trust by encouraging our clients to take actionable steps that are going to result in success, and so that then they can see that these things are possible and then they can trust themselves more and that they can build on those small steps and grow from there. And I love that you mentioned about the obstacles as well. And I think that one thing that we can help with supporting our clients in building their trust and developing their own self-trust and as well as trust in the process and trust in our role as a coach who's partnering with and supporting and encouraging and giving space for our client to fumble and to navigate these obstacles, and keeping in mind that it's really important to remind our clients also that this is part of the process, obstacles, setbacks, those type of things. So I think it's important to create an environment or an atmosphere in which the client can feel comfortable making mistakes and the client can feel comfortable fumbling and not getting it right the first time. And then also reiterating the importance of the non-judgment. And not only is the coach suspending judgment or not, or looking at it with curiosity, because curiosity is the antidote to judgment, but really bringing in that curiosity piece in the process and also in the interaction with the client, encouraging the client to look at obstacles and look at challenges through a lens of curiosity and being curious about what's going on here and putting a little bit of distance between the situation and themselves, not taking it too personally. So those are some things that came up for me when you were talking, Erin. Is there anything else that you would like to add to this piece about building trust in the coaching relationship?
I think I want to add one more piece on like when people are growing up with how they trust themselves, that's being shaped early on. And so just being gentle with individuals as they come into your, coaching practice and really maybe trying to better understand some of that background history so that you get a better understanding of your client. Because I think some people can come in and look confident and collected, high achieving. But when you start to talk about trust, those are all masks because they don't trust themselves in certain ways. As a former perfectionist, and that way I can relate on a personal level as far as the masks that I wore and still grapple with wearing. And I think that those clients in particular often seek out coaching, and then they are really good candidates for this topic around trust and just being transparent and helping them to take a different type of risk than what they're typically used to in their lives. I think that can be really helpful. And then the other thing is, sometimes those clients that match our own personalities, either that can be really helpful with building trust, or that can be a challenge, making sure that we trust ourselves as the professional and as the coach in the room to put our identity aside for a moment and really try to stay in that curiosity zone, like you talked about, to understand what questions you want to ask and how you want to work together with the individual client. So I think those are some of the other things that kind of came up for me in that realm. I guess I want to take it back and ask you a question about trust and specifically to relationships, because that is universal and not just in coaching, but just relationships in general. What has been your experience with learning how to trust other people in intimate relationships and in intimate friendships, that that sort of thing?
That's a really good question. I think my experience has been mostly just being able to my just trust that the person is going to be there. I think that's one of the things that I personally have struggled with in the past is this feeling of shame around who I am and like showing my true colors. And it's really interesting that you should mention mask and how my early experience has been like when I was a child, I was, unfiltered and I would just present myself as I am authentically. And often what would end up happening is I would have friends just disappear and they would stop wanting to play with me or they would move on to another friend group and I would be kind of left kind of wondering what happened. Now, of course, because I have shame around that, like my authentic self, my rationale for them not being my friend or not spending time with me the way they had before. And it seemed to me very sudden. It wasn't a gradual thing. It was like a sudden thing. Like one day I had a friend, we were great. And then the next day they didn't want to have anything to do with me. So then I, of course, would think, oh, it's me. My child's brain didn't really think, oh, there's other factors at play here. And so that created a little bit of a pattern. And so one thing that I have noticed in terms of my like friendships, for example, is I am very reluctant to show my whole self or my authentic self in a friendship. And when I do, I am very vigilant about like, is a person still there? Is a person showing up in the same way? And can I trust this person? And so if the person is still there and they're showing up in the same way, then I can let down other masks that I wear. But it's little by little. And my experience has been little by little. I can take off this mask, or I can take off this mask, and I can take off this mask until eventually I consider myself in a very solid and trusting relationship when I can take off all my masks and I can just be myself with that person and they're still there. So presence is big for me. How about you, Erin?
I hadn't thought about how that presence staying the same can be a consistent, just like notifier of trust in the individual. And I like how you frame that. I think that makes a lot of sense. And like you, I feel like I have a lot of shame around who I am, or like as a child, I had that. And so trying to trust myself is probably the biggest barrier in any relationship that I have. I will be very trusting because I tend to be very humanistic and I love people and I want relationships and I like being connected. And I know this is different for a lot of people. Like my husband pointed out, he's like, just remember, like you like relationships and you really like being connected. Like that's your thing. And many people have different values and those aren't their top values and that's okay. So for me, I have to be a little, remind myself, be a little bit more cautious about my own feelings in terms of what I foresee a relationship to be, and then hope that it surpasses those. Because I also, not only in relationships, but just in life, I tend to have an overly idealistic view of things that can get me in some trouble. And that can be a struggle. But I think that the trust that I've learned to gain through coaching, even in intimate relationships with close friends and my partner, I think coaching and the questions I can ask myself and the breathing that I can do and the curiosity that I can bring to myself has helped me to develop better relationships. And longer term relationships as well. I think that when you can show a vulnerable side of yourself where you're not showing up as your best self, or you're in a frustrated state of whatever it may be related to work or personal life or whatever it is, I think true friendship can be so magical in those moments that because they come alongside you, these friends, right? They come alongside you in those moments and are just open to where you're at and also open to calling you in too. Like, hey, I noticed this lately or something. And I think that that is how in the relationships with friends and in my partner, that there is a lot of trust that's built. It's messy for me usually too. Like, I struggle with some mental health challenges that cause some paranoia to creep up into certain things sometimes. And so I have to have a firm relationship that can be like a little bit, not a reality check, but just a container. That and so I deeply, deeply value relationships for my own, obviously, needs and selfishly, and also just as a way to connect too. But I also value other people, and I value what they bring to a relationship. And I like to share that, and whether that's through words or gift giving or things like that. There are things for me that I do that I really like to do to show people that I'm grateful for them in my life. And friends and romantic partnerships, right? Like, those things I really do value, and I feel so much gratitude in my life for them. Yeah, so I think I'll stop there. I kind of just ramble.
No, there's a lot going on there. So, like, for example, one thing that stood out for me in this was what you said at the beginning about self-trust. And I think that is a piece that goes along with the shame piece as well. So if you can trust yourself and trust that you are, you know, that your true authentic self is deserving of friendship and deserving of connection with others, then it's easier to put away the mask that one might wear. I'm going to say one might wear in social situations or in different situations. So that piece stood out for me in what you said about the self-trust. And what's interesting is kind of a theme throughout a piece that you're bringing in, which is the idea of the self and how really it does feel like from this discussion that it does start with ourselves, like inner work. There's a lot of inner work that is necessary for trust to take hold or for trust to be established. There's the self-trust and there's also the personal trust, like trusting the other person. But I do think that one thing that you're bringing up a lot, that you're shedding light on, is that individual piece where that could color so many things. Our ability to trust ourselves is going to affect our ability to trust others, and to be able to recognize when there is trustworthiness in a person. So I think there's that piece too. Like being able to discern between a trustworthy person and someone who may not be very trustworthy. And then there's also that piece of giving ourselves grace, because when we enter into a relationship, whether it be personal, professional, we can, some people might not take it as at face value what we see at the beginning. And it's usually, in my case, I'll just speak for myself, one must prove that they can't be trusted for me to not trust them. Like, so for example, if I tell someone something in confidence and it gets back to me, then I know that that one person is the person that I told that I can't trust that person. And so I'm going to pull back and I'm going to hold that person a little bit at a distance and probably will not trust that person again. And that there would have to be some situation in which either they were able to tell me that it slipped out or something like that. But I would, you know, take note of that. So there's that piece as well, that trustworthiness. Erin, do you have anything to say about that piece, the trustworthiness?
I like how you first started talking about it, like when we're talking about the other people in the relationship now, and the trustworthiness piece of that, your example of people who may, or a friend who maybe says, you say something in confidence and then it gets repeated, right? That's a clear example of not being a trustworthy friend. And so as you were talking before that example, my brain was kind of like, well, what are examples of not being trustworthy? And so I think what you said is one of the key examples, right, of how people harm relationships. And, you know, I think about it as a relational thing, and that there is love in the relationship, whether platonic or romantic. And I think that word comes to me as part of trustworthiness. It's like people who show you love, how do they show that? Well, it's one, by being trustworthy. So what does trustworthy look like? Well, like your example, trustworthiness also looks like, you know, being dependable in terms of when you need help with something or need support, that interconnected piece that is a duality between you and an individual or goes back and forth. It's not a one-sided thing necessarily. I think trustworthiness too is showcased by what I mentioned earlier about like calling in. And I think that's where love comes into the picture too, because love is an action. Love isn't just a word, for lack of better words. So when love comes into play by holding space for people, it can also be by gently pointing out things. Hey, I noticed you said this today. Are you okay? Or can I get you this cup of tea right now because of this? Or, you know, whatever it may be, small, small, small acts of love, which tends to be something that we hear about throughout time, really small acts of love and the importance of them. But I think that plays into trustworthiness a lot. But I'm just circling in my mind, and maybe this is more coaching nugget of wisdom time, but just like this idea of like, I think we should write an article together about trust in coaching, or like talk about it more, or include something in maybe some of the writings that we'll be working on or that we're working on, because I think it could be a really powerful word that gets overlooked from what I have seen in like the academic literature on coaching. I don't see that as much, right? We see a lot on the listening and the questioning and the psychology and all of that. So I'm interested now after this conversation. I am very much interested in learning more about trust and trustworthiness and in relationship to the coach and coaching process. So I don't know if that relates to coaching nugget of wisdom or not. I guess the coaching nugget of wisdom from that would be to continue these conversations about trust with someone in your own life that you have deep conversations with. There might be something new that you uncover in your relationship that sparks something beautiful, right? Or that sparks something meaningful between you two. So that would be my coaching nugget of wisdom for today.
Great. I like the idea of writing on this topic and looking at it maybe through the coaching lens and beyond. And a coaching nugget of wisdom that I would like to share is more exploration on and not self piece. And it's coming from you, Erin. So for me, that's the thing. Like when I think about trust, I think about in terms of other people. Like, can I trust other people? Can I? And also what I need to do in order to be trustworthy. So I would say, I would encourage, my coaching nugget of wisdom would be to encourage our listeners to look back at times in their lives, maybe early in their life, where they were learning about trust and what trust looks like, what trust feels like, and what one is looking for in their lives when it comes to trust and trust in relationship.
Thanks for joining us for Coaching as Benevolence. I'm LaShawn with Meychelle Sage Place, Positive Intelligence Coaching.
And I'm Erin with Roots and Wings, Grief and Loss Coaching.
Have a benevolent day.